Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Part 3, Chapter 12. How the Whole and the Sick are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are the whole and the sick. For the whole are to be admonished that they employ the health of the body to the health of the soul, lest if they turn the grace of granted soundness to the use of iniquity, they be made worse by the gift, and afterwards merit the severer punishments, in that they fear not now to use amiss the more bountiful gifts of God. The whole are to be admonished that they despise not the opportunity of winning health forever. For it is written, Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. They are to be admonished, lest if they will not please God when they may not be able when, too late, they would. For hence it is that wisdom afterwards deserts those whom, too long refusing, she before called, saying, I have called, and you refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. You have set at nothing all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. I will also laugh at your destruction, and will mock when what you feared comes. And again, Then shall they call upon me, and I will not hearken. They shall rise early, and shall not find me. And so, when health of body, received for the purpose of doing good, is despised, it is felt after it is lost, how precious was the gift. And at the last, it is fruitlessly sought, having been enjoyed unprofitably when granted at the fit time. From whence it is well said through Solomon, Give not your honor unto aliens, and your years unto the cruel, lest, haply, strangers be filled with your wealth, and your labors be in the house of a stranger, and you moan at the last when your flesh and body are consumed. For who are aliens from us, but malignant spirits, who are separated from the lot of the heavenly country? And what is our honor, but that, though made in bodies of clay, we are yet created after the image and likeness of our Maker? And who else is cruel but that apostate angel, who has both smitten himself with the pain of death through pride, and has not spared, though lost, to bring death upon the human race? He, therefore, gives his honor unto aliens, who, being made after the image and likeness of God, devotes the seasons of his life to the pleasures of malignant spirits. He also surrenders his years to the cruel one who spends the space of life accorded him after the will of the ill-domineering adversary. And in the same place it is well added, Lest haply strangers be filled with thy wealth, and labors be in this house of a stranger. For whosoever, through the healthiest state of body received by him, or the wisdom of mind granted to him, labors not in the practice of virtues, but in the perpetration of vices, he by no means fills his own house, but the habitations of strangers, with his wealth. That is, he multiplies the deeds of unclean spirits, and indeed so acts in his luxuriousness or his pride, as even to increase the number of the lost by the addition of himself. Furthermore, it is well added, And thou moan at the last when your flesh and your body are consumed. For the most part, the health of the flesh, which has been received, is spent through vices. But when it is suddenly withdrawn, when the flesh is worn with afflictions, when the soul is already urged to go forth, then lost health, long enjoyed for ill, is sought again as though for living well. And then men moan that they would not serve God when altogether unable to repair the losses of their negligence by serving him. Whence it is said in another place, "When he slew them, then they sought him." But on the other hand, the sick are to be admonished that they feel themselves to be sons of God, in that the scourge of discipline chastises them. For unless he purposed to give them an inheritance after correction, he would not have a care to educate them by afflictions. For hence the Lord says to John by the angel, "Whom I love, I rebuke and chasten." Hence again it is written, "My son, despise not the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives." Hence the psalmist says, "Many are the tribulations of the righteous, and out of all these has the Lord delivered them." Hence also the blessed Job, crying out in his sorrow, says, "If I be righteous, I will not lift up my head, being saturated with affliction and misery." The sick are to be told that if they believe the heavenly country to be their own, they must needs endure labors in this as in a strange land. For hence it was that the stones were hammered outside, that they might be laid without sound of hammer in the building of the temple of the Lord. Because, that is, we are now hammered with scourges without, that we may afterwards set in our places within, without stroke of discipline, in the temple of God, to the end that strokes may now cut away whatever is superfluous in us, and then the concord of charity alone bind us together in the building. The sick are to be admonished to consider what severe scourges of discipline chastise our sons after the flesh for attaining earthly inheritances. What pain, then, of divine correction is hard upon us, by which both a never-to-be-lost inheritance is attained, and punishments which shall endure forever are avoided? For hence Paul says, "We have had fathers of our flesh as our educators, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much more be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live?" And they indeed for a few days educated us after their own will, but he for our profit in the receiving of his sanctification. The sick are to be admonished to consider how great health of the heart is in bodily affliction, which recalls the mind to knowledge of itself and renews the memory of infirmity, which health for the most part casts away, so that the spirit, which is carried out of itself into elation, may be reminded by the smitten flesh from which it suffers to what condition it is subject. Which thing is rightly signified to Balaam, had he but been willing to follow obediently the voice of God, in the very retardation of his journey. For Balaam is on his way to attain his purpose, but the animal which is under him thwarts his desire. The ass, stopped by the prohibition, sees an angel which the human mind sees not, because for the most part the flesh, slow through afflictions, indicates to the mind from the scourge which it endures the God whom the mind itself, which has the flesh under it, did not see, in such sort as to impede the eagerness of the spirit, which desires to advance in this world as though proceeding on a journey, until it makes known to it the invisible one who stands in its way. Whence also it is well said through Peter, "He had the dumb beast of burden for a rebuke of his madness, which, speaking with a man's voice, forbade the foolishness of the prophet." For indeed, a man is rebuked as mad by a dumb beast of burden, when an elated mind is reminded by the afflicted flesh of the good of humility which it ought to retain. But Balaam did not obtain the benefit of this rebuke for this reason, that, going to curse, he changed his voice, but not his mind. The sick are to be admonished to consider how great a boon is bodily affliction, which both washes away committed sins and restrains those which might have been committed, which inflicts on the troubled mind wounds of penitence derived from outward stripes. Whence it is written, "The blueness of a wound cleanseth away evil and stripes in the secret part of the belly." For the blueness of a wound cleanses away evil, because the pain of scourges cleanses iniquities, whether meditated or perpetrated. But by the appellation of belly, the mind is wont to be understood. For that the mind is called the belly is taught by that sentence in which it is written, "The spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, which searches all the secret parts of the belly." As if to say, the illumination of divine inspiration, when it comes into a man's mind, shows it to itself by illuminating it, whereas before the coming of the Holy Spirit, it both could entertain bad thoughts and knew not how to estimate them. Then the blueness of a wound cleanses away evil and stripes in the secret parts of the belly, because when we are stricken outwardly, we are recalled, silent and afflicted, to memory of our sins, and bring back before our eyes all our past evil deeds. And through what we suffer outwardly, we grieve inwardly the more for what we have done. Whence it comes to pass that in the midst of open wounds of the body, the secret stripe in the belly cleanses us more fully, because a hidden wound of sorrow heals the iniquities of evil-doing. The sick are to be admonished, to the end that they may keep the virtue of patience, to consider incessantly how great evils our Redeemer endured from those whom he had created, that he bore so many vile insults of reproach, that while daily snatching the souls of captives from the hand of the old enemy, he took blows on the face from insulting men, that while washing us with the water of salvation, he hid not his face from the spittings of the faithless, that while delivering us by his advocacy from eternal punishments, he bore scourges in silence, that while giving to us eternal honors among the choirs of angels, he endured buffets, that while saving us from the prickings of our sins, he refused not to submit his head to thorns, that while inebriating us with eternal sweetness, he accepted in his thirst the bitterness of gall, that he who for us adored the Father, though equal to him in Godhead, when adored in mockery, held his peace, that while preparing life for the dead, he who was himself the life, came even unto death. Why, then, is it thought hard that man should endure scourges from God for evil-doing, if God underwent so great evils for well-doing? Or who with sound understanding can be ungrateful for being himself stricken, when even he who lived him here without sin went not from here without a scourge? End of chapter 12. Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, Chapter 13. How those who fear scourges and those who contemn them are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are those who fear scourges and on that account live innocently, and those who have grown so hard in wickedness as not to be corrected even by scourges. For those who fear scourges are to be told by no means to desire temporal goods as being of great account, seeing that bad men also have them, and by no means to shun present evils as intolerable, seeing that they are not ignorant how, for the most part, good men are also touched by them. They are to be admonished that if they desire to be truly free from evils, they should dread eternal punishments, nor yet continue in this fear of punishments, but grow up by the nursing of charity to the grace of love. For it is written, "Perfect charity casts out fear." And again it is written, "You have not received the spirit of bondage again in fear, but the spirit of adoption of sons, wherein we cry, Abba, Father." Whence the same teacher says again, "Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty." If, then, the fear of punishment still restrains from evil-doing, truly no liberty of spirit possesses the soul of him that so fears. For were he not afraid of the punishment, he would doubtless commit the sin. The mind, therefore, that is bound by the bondage of fear, knows not the grace of liberty. For good should be loved for itself, not pursued because of the compulsion of penalties. For he that does what is good for this reason, that he is afraid of the evil of torments, wishes that what he fears were not, so that he might commit what is unlawful boldly. Whence it appears clearer than the light that innocence is thus lost before God, in whose eyes evil desire is sin. But on the other hand, those whom not even scourges restrain from iniquities are to be smitten with sharper rebuke in proportion as they have grown hard with greater insensibility. For generally, they are to be disdained without disdain, and despaired of without despair. So, to wit, that the despair exhibited may strike them with dread, and admonition following may bring them back to hope. Sternly, therefore, against them should the divine judgments be set forth, that they may be recalled by consideration of eternal retribution to knowledge of themselves. For let them hear that in them is fulfilled that which is written, "If you should bray a fool in a mortar, as with a pestle pounding barley, his foolishness will not be taken away from him." Against these the prophet complains to the Lord, saying, "You have bruised them, and they have refused to receive discipline." Hence it is that the Lord says, "I have slain and destroyed this people, and yet they have not returned from their ways." Hence he says again, "The people hath not returned to him that smites them." Hence the prophet complains by the voice of the scourgers, saying, "We have taken care for Babylon, and she is not healed." For Babylon is taken care for, yet still not restored to health, when the mind, confused in evil-doing, hears the words of rebuke, feels the scourges of rebuke, and yet scorns to return to the straight paths of salvation. Hence the Lord reproaches the children of Israel, captive, but yet not converted from their iniquity, saying, "The house of Israel is to me become dross. All they are brass and tin and iron and lead in the midst of the furnace." As if to say plainly, "I would have purified them by the fire of tribulation, and I sought that they should become silver or gold, but they have been turned before me in the furnace into brass, tin, iron, and lead, because even in tribulation they have broken forth not to virtue, but to vices." For indeed brass, when it is struck, returns a sound more than all other metals. He, therefore, who, when subjected to strokes, breaks out into a sound of murmuring, is turned into brass in the midst of the furnace. But tin, when it is dressed with art, has a false show of silver. He, then, who is not free from the vice of pretense in the midst of tribulation, becomes tin in the furnace. Moreover, he who plots against the life of his neighbor uses iron. Wherefore iron in the furnace is he who in tribulation loses not the malice that would do hurt. Lead also is the heaviest of metals. He then is found as lead in the furnace, who even when placed in the midst of tribulation is not raised above earthly desires. Hence again it is written, "She has wearied herself with much labor, and her exceeding rust went not out from her, not even by fire." For he brings upon us the fire of tribulation, that he may purge us from the rust of vices. But we lose not our rust even by fire, when even amid scourges we lack not vice. Hence the prophet says again, "The founder has melted in vain, their wickednesses are not consumed." It is, however, to be known that sometimes when they remain uncorrected amid the hardness of scourges, they are to be soothed by sweet admonition. For those who are not corrected by torments are sometimes restrained from unrighteous deeds by gentle blandishments. For commonly the sick too, whom a strong potion of medicine has not availed to cure, have been restored to their former health by tepid water. And some sores which cannot be cured by incision are healed by fomentations of oil. And hard diamond admits not at all of incision by steel, but is softened by the mild blood of goats. Chapter 14. How the Silent and Talkative Are to Be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are the over-silent and those who spend time in much speaking. For it ought to be insinuated to the over-silent that while they shun some vices unadvisedly, they are, without its being perceived, implicated in worse. For often, from bridling the tongue overmuch, they suffer from more grievous loquacity in the heart, so that thoughts seethe the more in the mind from being narrowed by the violent guard of indiscreet silence. And, for the most part, they overflow all the more widely as they count themselves the more secure because of not being seen by fault-finders without. From which sometimes a man's mind is exalted into pride, and he despises as weak those whom he hears speaking. And when he shuts the mouth of his body, he is not aware to what extent through his pride he lays himself open to vices. For his tongue he represses, his mind he exalts, and little considering his own wickedness, accuses all in his own mind by so much the more freely as he does it also the more secretly. The over-silent are therefore to be admonished that they study anxiously to know not only what manner of men they ought to exhibit themselves outwardly, but also what manner of men they ought to show themselves inwardly, that they fear more a hidden judgment in respect of their thoughts than the reproof of their neighbors in respect of their speeches. For it is written, "My son, attend to my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my prudence, that you may guard your thoughts." For indeed, nothing is more fugitive than the heart, which deserts us as often as it slips away through bad thoughts. For hence the psalmist says, "My heart has failed me." Hence, when he returns to himself, he says, "Your servant has found his heart to pray to you." When, therefore, thought is kept under guard, the heart which was wont to fly away is found. Moreover, the over-silent, for the most part, when they suffer some injustices, come to have a keener sense of pain from not speaking of what they endure. For were the tongue to tell calmly the annoyances that have been caused, the pain would flow away from the consciousness. For closed sores torment the more, since when the corruption that is hot within is cast out, the pain is opened out for healing. They, therefore, who are silent more than is expedient, ought to know this, lest amid the annoyances which they endure while they hold their tongue, they aggravate the violence of their pain. For they are to be admonished that if they love their neighbors as themselves, they should by no means keep from them the grounds on which they justly blame them. For from the medicine of the voice, there is a concurrent effect for the health of both parties. On the side of him who inflicts the injury, his bad conduct is checked, and on the side of him who sustains it, the violent heat of pain is allayed by opening out the sore. For those who take notice of what is evil in their neighbors, and yet refrain their tongue in silence, withdraw, as it were, the aid of medicine from observed sores, and become the causers of death, in that they would not cure the venom which they could have cured. The tongue, therefore, should be discreetly curbed, not tied up fast. For it is written, a wise man will hold his tongue until the time, in order assuredly that when he considers it opportune, he may relinquish the censorship of silence, and apply himself to the service of utility by speaking such things as are fit. And again it is written, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. For indeed, the times for changes should be discreetly weighed, lest either when the tongue ought to be restrained, it run loose to no profit in words, or when it might speak with profit, it slothfully restrain itself. Considering which thing well, the psalmist says, set a watch, O Lord, on my mouth, and a door round about my lips. For he seeks not that a wall should be set on his lips, but a door, that is, what is opened and shut. Whence we too ought to learn warily, to the end that the voice discreetly and at the fitting time may open the mouth, and at the fitting time silence close it. But on the other hand, those who spend time in much speaking are to be admonished that they vigilantly note from what a state of rectitude they fall away when they flow abroad in a multitude of words. For the human mind, after the manner of water, when closed in, is collected unto higher levels, in that it seeks again the height from which it descended, and when let loose, it falls away, in that it disperses itself unprofitably through the lowest places. For by as many superfluous words as is dissipated from the censorship of its silence, by so many streams, as it were, is it drawn away out of itself, whence also it is unable to return inwardly to knowledge of itself, because, being scattered by much speaking, it excludes itself from the secret place of inmost consideration. But it uncovers its whole self to the wounds of the enemy who lies in want, wait, because it surrounds itself with no defense of watchfulness. Hence it is written, as a city that lies open and without environment of walls, so is a man that cannot keep in his spirit in speaking. For because it has not the wall of silence, the city of the mind lies open to the darts of the foe. And when by words it casts itself out of itself, it shows itself exposed to the adversary. And he overcomes it with so much the less labor, as with the more labor the mind itself, which is conquered, fights against itself by much speaking. Moreover, since the indolent mind for the most part lapses by degrees into downfall, while we neglect to guard against idle words, we go on to hurtful ones. So that at first it pleases us to talk of other men's affairs, afterwards the tongue gnaws with detraction the lives of those whom we talk, but at last breaks out even into open slanders. Hence are sown pricking thorns. Quarrels arise. The torches of enmities are kindled. The peace of hearts is extinguished. Whence it is well said through Solomon, he that lets out water is a wellspring of strife. For to let out water is to let loose the tongue to a flux of speech. Wherefore, on the other hand, in the good sense, it is said again, the words of a man's mouth are like deep water. He therefore who lets out water is the wellspring of strifes, because he who curbs not his tongue dissipates concord. Hence, on the other hand, it is written, he that imposes silence on a fool allays enmities. Moreover, that anyone who gives himself to much speaking cannot keep the straight way of righteousness is testified by the prophet, who says, a man full of words shall not be guided aright upon the earth. Hence also Solomon says again, in the multitude of words there shall not want sin. Hence Isaiah says, the culture of righteousness is silence, indicating, to wit, that the righteousness of the mind is desolated when there is no stint of immoderate speaking. Hence James says, if any man thinks himself to be religious, and bridles not his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Hence again he says, let every man be swift to hear, but slow to speak. Hence again, defining the power of the tongue, he adds, an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Hence, the truth in person admonishes us, saying, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For indeed, every word is idle that lacks either a reason of just necessity or an intention of pious usefulness. If then an account is required of idle discourse, let us weigh well what punishment awaits what much speaking, in which there is also the sin of hurtful words. End of chapter 14. Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, chapter 15. How the slothful and the hasty are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are the slothful and the hasty. For the former are to be persuaded not to lose by putting it off the good they have to do. But the latter are to be admonished, lest while they forestall the time of good deeds by inconsiderate haste, they change their meritorious character. To the slothful, therefore, it is to be intimated that often when we will not do at the right time what we can, before long, when we will, we cannot. For the very indolence of the mind, when it is not kindled with befitting fervor, gets cut off by a torpor that stealthily grows upon it from all desire of good things. Whence it is plainly said through Solomon, slothfulness casts into a deep sleep. For the slothful one is, as it were, awake in that he feels aright, though he grows torpid by doing nothing. But slothfulness is said to cast into a deep sleep, because by degrees even the wakefulness of right feeling is lost, when zeal for well-doing is discontinued. And in the same place it is rightly added, and a dissolute soul shall suffer hunger. For because it braces itself not towards higher things, it lets itself run loose, uncared for, in lower desires, and while not braced with the vigor of lofty aims, suffers the pangs of the hunger of low concupiscence. And in that it neglects to bind itself up by discipline, it scatters itself the more abroad, hungry in its craving after pleasures. Hence it is written again by the same Solomon, the idle man is wholly in desires. Hence, in the preaching of the truth himself, the house is said indeed to be clean when one spirit has gone out, but when empty, it is taken possession of by his returning with many more. For the most part, the slothful, while he neglects to do things that are necessary, sets before him some that are difficult, but is inconsiderately afraid of others, and so, as though finding something that he may reasonably fear, he satisfies himself that he has good reason for remaining torpid. To him it is rightly said, through Solomon, the sluggard would not plough by reason of the cold, Therefore shall he beg in summer, and it shall not be given to him. For indeed the sluggard ploughs not by reason of the cold, when he finds an excuse for not doing the good things which he ought to do. The sluggard ploughs not by reason of the cold, when he is afraid of small evils that are against him, and leaves undone things of the greatest importance. Further, it is well said, he shall beg in summer, and it shall not be given to him. For whoso toils not now in good works will beg in summer and receive nothing, because when the burning sun of judgment shall appear, he will then sue in vain for entrance into the kingdom. To him it is well said again, through the same Solomon, he that observes the wind does not sow, and he that regards the clouds never reaps. For what is expressed by the wind but the temptation of malignant spirits? And what are denoted by the clouds which are moved by the wind but the oppositions of bad men? The clouds, that is to say, are driven by the winds, because bad men are excited by the blasts of unclean spirits. He then that observes the wind does not sow, and he that regards the clouds does not reap, because whosoever fears the temptation of malignant spirits, whosoever fears the persecution of bad men, and does not sow the seed of good works now, neither does he then reap handfuls of holy recompense. But on the other hand, the hasty, while they forestall the time of good deeds, pervert their merit, and often fall into what is evil, while failing altogether to discern what is good. Such persons look not at all to see what things they are doing when they do them, but for the most part, when they are done, become aware that they should not have done them. To such, under the guise of a learner, it is well said in Solomon, "My son, do nothing without counsel, and after it is done, you shall not repent." And again, "Let your eyelids go before your steps." For indeed, our eyelids go before our steps when right counsels prevent our bad doings. For he who neglects to look forward by consideration to what he is about to do, advances his steps with his eyes closed, proceeds on and accomplishes his journey, but goes not in advance of himself by looking forward, and therefore the sooner falls, because he gives no heed through the eyelid of counsel to where he should set the foot of action. Chapter 16. How the Meek and the Passionate Are to Be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are the meek and the passionate, for sometimes the meek, when they are in authority, suffer from the torpor of sloth, which is a kindred disposition, and, as it were, placed hard by, and, for the most part, from the laxity of too great gentleness, they soften the force of strictness beyond need. But on the other hand, the passionate, in that they are swept on into frenzy of mind by the impulse of anger, break up the calm of quietness, and so throw into confusion the life of those that are put under them. For when rage drives them headlong, they know not what they do in their anger. They know not what in their anger they suffer from themselves. But sometimes, what is more serious, they think the goad of their anger to be the zeal of righteousness. And when vice is believed to be virtue, guilt is piled up without fear. Often, then, the meek grow torpid in the laziness of inactivity. Often the passionate are deceived by the zeal of uprightness. Thus to the virtue of the former, a vice is adjoined unawares. But to the latter, their vice appears as though it were fervent virtue. Those, therefore, are to be admonished to fly what is close beside themselves, but these to take heed to what is in themselves. Those to discern what they do not have, and these what they do have. Let the meek embrace solicitude, let the passionate ban perturbation. The meek are to be admonished that they study to have also the zeal of righteousness. The passionate are to be admonished that to the zeal which they think they have, they add meekness. For on this account the Holy Spirit has been manifested to us in a dove and in fire. Because, to wit, all whom he fills, he causes to show themselves as meek with the simplicity of the dove, and burning with the fire of zeal. He, then, is in no wise full of the Holy Spirit, who either in the calm of meekness forsakes the fervor of zeal, or again in the ardor of zeal loses the virtue of meekness. Which thing we shall perhaps better show if we bring forward the authority of Paul, who to two who were his disciples, and endowed with a like charity, he supplies nevertheless different aids for preaching. For in admonishing Timothy, he says, "Reprove, entreat, rebuke, with all long-suffering and doctrine." Titus also he admonishes, saying, "These things speak, and exhort, and rebuke with all authority." What is the reason that he dispenses his teaching with so great art, as, in exhibiting it, to recommend authority to the one and long-suffering to the other? Except that he saw Titus to be of a meeker spirit, and Timothy of one a little more fervid. The former he inflames with the earnestness of zeal. The latter he moderates by the gentleness of long-suffering. To the one he adds what is wanting, from the other he subtracts what is overabundant. The one he endeavors to push on with a spur, the other to keep back with a bridle. For the great husbandman who has the church in charge waters some shoots that they may grow, but prunes others when he sees that they grow too much, lest either by not growing they should bear no fruit, or by growing overmuch they should lose the fruits they may put forth. But far different is the anger that creeps in under the guise of zeal from that which confounds the perturbed heart without pretext of righteousness. For the former is extended inordinately in that wherein it ought to be, but the latter is ever kindled in that wherein it ought not to be. It should indeed be known that in this the passionate differ from the impatient, that the latter do not bear with things brought upon them by others, but the passionate themselves bring on things to be borne with. For the passionate often follow after those who shun them, stir up occasion of strife, rejoice in the toil of contention. And yet, such we better correct if in the midst of the commotion of their anger, we do shun them. For while they are perturbed, they do not know what we say to them. But when brought back to themselves, they receive words of exhortation the more freely, in proportion as they blush at having been the more calmly borne with. But to a mind that is drunk with fury, every right thing that is said appears wrong. Whence to Nabal, when he was drunk, Abigail laudably kept silence about his fault. But when he had digested his wine, as laudably she told him of it. For he could for this reason perceive the evil he had done, but he did not hear of it when drunk. But when the passionate so attack others that they cannot altogether be shunned, they should be smitten not with open rebuke, but sparingly, with a certain respectful cautiousness. And this we shall show better if we bring forward what was done by Abner. For when Asahel attacked him with the violence of inconsiderate haste, it is written, "Abner spoke unto Asahel, saying, Turn aside from following me, lest I be driven to smite you to the ground." Howbeit, Asahel scorned to listen, and refused to turn aside. Whereupon Abner smote him with the hind end of the spear in the groin, and thrust him through, and he died. For of whom did Asahel present a type, but of those whom fury violently seizes and carries headlong? And such, in this same attack of fury, are to be shunned cautiously, in proportion as they are madly hurried on. Whence also Abner, who in our speech is called the lantern of the Father, fled. Because when the tongue of teachers, which indicates the supernal light of God, sees the mind of anyone borne along over the steeps of rage, and refrains from casting back darts of words against the angry person, it is as though it were unwilling to smite one that is pursuing. But when the passionate will not pacify themselves by any consideration, and, like Asahel, cease not to pursue and to be mad, it is necessary that those who endeavor to repress these furious ones should by no means lift themselves up in fury, but exhibit all possible calmness, and yet adroitly bring something to bear, whereby they may, by a side thrust, prick the heart of the furious one. Whence also Abner, when he made a stand against his pursuer, pierced him not with a direct stroke, but with the hind end of the spear. For to strike with the point is to oppose with an onset of open rebuke, but to smite the pursuer with the hind end of the spear is calmly to touch the furious one with certain hits, and as it were, by sparing him, overcome him. Asahel, moreover, straightway fell, because agitated minds, when they feel themselves to be spared, and are yet touched inwardly by answers given in calmness, fall at once from the elevation to which they had raised themselves. Those then who rebound from the onset of their heat under the stroke of gentleness die, as it were, without steel. End of chapter 16. Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, chapter 17. How the Humble and the Haughty are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are the humble and the haughty. To the former, it is to be insinuated how true is that excellence which they hold in hoping for it. To the latter, it is to be intimated how that temporal glory is as nothing, which even when embracing it, they hold it not. Let the humble hear how eternal are the things that they long for, how transitory the things which they despise. Let the haughty hear how transitory are the things they court, how eternal the things they lose. Let the humble hear from the authoritative voice of the truth, every one that humbles himself shall be exalted. Let the haughty hear, every one that exalts himself shall be humbled. Let the humble hear, humility goes before glory. Let the haughty hear, pride goes before a fall. Let the humble hear, unto whom shall I have respect, but to him that is humble and quiet, and that trembles at my words? Let the haughty hear, why is earth and ashes proud? Let the humble hear, God turns his face upon the things that are humble. Let the haughty hear, and lofty things he knows from far off. Let the humble hear that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Let the haughty hear, the beginning of all sin is pride. Let the humble hear that our Redeemer humbled himself, being made obedient, even unto death. Let the haughty hear what is written concerning their head, he is king over all the sons of pride. The pride, therefore, of the devil became the occasion of our perdition, and the humility of God has been found the argument for our redemption. For our enemy, having been created among all things, desired to appear exalted above all things. But our Redeemer, remaining great above all things, deigned to become little among all things. Let the humble then be told that when they abase themselves, they ascend to the likeness of God. Let the haughty be told that when they exalt themselves, they fall into imitation of the apostate angel, What, then, is more debased than haughtiness, which, while it stretches itself above itself, is lengthened out beyond the stature of true loftiness? And what is more sublime than humility, which, while it presses itself down to the lowest, conjoins itself to its Maker, who remains above the highest? There is, however, another thing in these cases that ought to be carefully considered: that some are often deceived by a false show of humility, while some are beguiled by ignorance of their own haughtiness. For commonly, some who think themselves humble have an admixture of fear, such as is not due to men, while an assertion of free speech commonly goes with the haughty. And when any vices require to be rebuked, the former hold their peace out of fear, and yet esteem themselves as being silent out of humility. The latter speak in the impatience of haughtiness, yet believe themselves to be speaking in the freedom of uprightness. Those, the fault of timidity under a show of humility, keeps back from rebuking what is wrong. These, the unbridled impetuosity of pride, under the image of freedom, impels to rebuke things they ought not, or to rebuke them more than they ought. For this reason, both the haughty are to be admonished not to be free more than is becoming, and the humble are to be admonished not to be more submissive than is right, lest either the former, the haughty, turn the defense of righteousness into a display of pride, or the latter, while they study more than needs to submit themselves to men, be driven even to pay respect to men's vices. It is, however, to be considered that for the most part we more profitably reprove the haughty, if with our reproofs of them we mingle some balms of praise. For some other good things that are in them should be introduced into our reproofs, or at all events some that might have been, though they are not. And then, at last, the bad things that displease us should be cut away, when previous allowance of the good things that please us has made their minds favorably disposed to listen. For unbroken horses, too, we first touch with a gentle hand, that we may afterwards subdue them to us, even with whips. And the sweetness of honey is added to the bitter cup of medicine, lest the bitterness, which is to be of profit for health, be felt harsh in the act of tasting. But while the taste is deceived by sweetness, the deadly humor is expelled by bitterness. In the case, then, of the haughty, the first beginnings of our rebuke should be tempered with an admixture of praise, that while they admit the commendations which they love, they may also accept the reproofs which they hate. Moreover, we shall in most cases better persuade the haughty to their profit if we speak of their improvement as likely to profit us rather than them. If we request their amendment to be bestowed upon us more than on themselves. For haughtiness is easily bent to good if its bending be believed to be of profit to others also. Whence Moses, who journeyed through the desert under the direction of God and the leading of the cloudy pillar, when he would draw Hobab his kinsman from converse with the Gentile world and subdue him to the dominion of Almighty God, said, "We are journeying to the place of which the Lord said, I will give it to you. Come with us, and we will do you good, for the Lord has spoken good concerning Israel." And when the other had replied to him, "I will not go with you, but will return to my own land in which I was born," Moses straightway added, "Do not leave us, I pray you, for you know in what places we should camp in the wilderness, and you will be our guide." And yet Moses was not restricted in his own mind by ignorance of the way, seeing that acquaintance with deity had opened out within him the knowledge of prophecy. And the pillar went before him outwardly, while inwardly, familiar speech in his sedulous converse with God instructed him concerning all things. But, in truth, as a man of foresight talking to a haughty hearer, he sought succor that he might give it. He requested a guide on the way, that he might be able to be Hobab's guide to life. Thus Moses so acted that the proud hearer should become all the more attentive to the voice that persuaded him to better things from being supposed to be necessary. And in that he believed himself to be his exhorter's guide, Hobab should bow himself to the words of exhortation. Chapter 18. How the Obstinate and the Fickle Are to Be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are the obstinate and the fickle. The former are to be told that they think more of themselves than they are, and therefore do not acquiesce in the counsels of others. But the fickle are to be given to understand that they undervalue and disregard themselves too much, and so are turned aside from their own judgment in successive moments of time. Those are to be told that unless they esteemed themselves better than the rest of men, they would by no means set less value on the counsels of all than on their own deliberation. The fickle are to be told that if they at all gave heed to what they are, the breeze of mutability would by no means turn them about through so many sides of variableness. To the obstinate it is said through Paul, "Do not be wise in your own conceits." But the latter, on the other hand, should hear this: "Let us not be carried about with every wind of doctrine." Concerning the obstinate, it is said through Solomon, "They shall eat of the fruits of their own way, and be filled with their own devices." But concerning the latter, it is written by him again, "The heart of the foolish will be unlike." For the heart of the wise is always like itself, because while it rests in good persuasions, it directs itself constantly in good performance. But the heart of the foolish is unlike itself, because while it shows itself various through mutability, it never remains what it was. And since some vices, as out of themselves they generate others, so themselves spring from still others, it ought by all means to be understood that we then better wipe these away by our reproofs when we dry them up from the very fountain of their bitterness. For obstinacy is engendered from pride, and fickleness from levity. The obstinate are therefore to be admonished that they acknowledge the haughtiness of their thoughts, and study to vanquish themselves, lest while they scorn to be overcome by the right advice of others outside themselves, they be held captive within themselves by pride. They are to be admonished to observe wisely how the Son of Man, whose will is always one with the Father's, that he may afford us an example of subduing our own will, says, "I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father who has sent me." And still more to commend the grace of this virtue, he declared beforehand that he would retain the same in the last judgment, saying, "I can of myself do nothing, but as I hear, I judge." With what conscience, then, can a man disdain to acquiesce in the will of another, saying that the Son of God and of man, when he comes to show forth the glory of his power, testifies that of his own self he does not judge? But, on the other hand, the fickle are to be admonished to strengthen their mind with gravity. For they then dry up the germs of mutability in themselves when they first cut off from their heart the root of levity, Since also a strong fabric is built up, when a solid place is first provided whereon to lay the foundation. Unless, then, levity of mind be previously guarded against, inconstancy of the thoughts is by no means conquered. From this Paul declared himself to be free when he said, "Did I use levity, or the things that I purpose, do I purpose according to the flesh, that with me there should be yea and nay?" As if to say plainly, "For this reason, I am moved by no breeze of mutability, that I yield not to the vice of levity." End of chapter 18. Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great, Book 3, Chapter 19. How those who use food intemperately and those who use it sparingly are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are the gluttonous and the abstinent, for superfluity of speech, levity of conduct, and lechery accompany the former. But the latter, often the sin of impatience and often that of pride. For were it not the case that immoderate loquacity carries away the gluttonous, that rich man who is said to have fared sumptuously every day would not burn more sorely than elsewhere in his tongue, saying, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." By these words, it is surely shown that in his daily feasting he had frequently sinned with his tongue, seeing that, while burning all over, he demanded to be cooled especially in his tongue. Again, that levity of conduct follows closely upon gluttony, sacred authority testifies, when it says, "The people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play." For the most part also, gluttony leads us even to lechery, because when the belly is distended by repletion, the stings of lust are excited. Whence also to the cunning foe, who opened the sense of the first man by lust for the apple, but bound it in a noose of sin. It is said by the divine voice, "On your breast and belly shall you creep." As if it were plainly said to him, "In thought and in maw you shall have dominion over human hearts." That lechery follows upon gluttony, the prophet testifies, denouncing hidden things while he speaks of open ones, when he says, "The chief of the cooks broke down the walls of Jerusalem." For the chief cook is the belly, to whom the cooks pay observance with great care, that it may itself be delectably filled with viands. But the walls of Jerusalem are the virtues of the soul, elevated to a longing for supernal peace. The chief of the cooks, therefore, throws down the walls of Jerusalem, because when the belly is distended with gluttony, the virtues of the soul are destroyed through lechery. On the other hand, were it not that impatience commonly shakes the abstinent out of the bosom of tranquillity, Peter would by no means, when saying, "Supply in your faith virtue, and in your virtue knowledge, and in your knowledge abstinence," have vigilantly added straightway, "and in your abstinence patience." For he foresaw that the patience which he admonished them to have would be wanting to the abstinent. Again, were it not that the sin of pride sometimes pierces through the cogitations of the abstinent, Paul would by no means have said, "Do not let him that does not eat judge him that eats." And again, speaking to others, while glancing at the maxims of such as gloried in the virtue of abstinence, he added, "Which things have indeed a show of wisdom in superstition and humility, and for not sparing of the body, not in any honor for the satisfying of the flesh. Here it is to be noted that the excellent preacher, in his argument, joins a show of humility to superstition, because when the flesh is worn more than needs by abstinence, humility is displayed outwardly. But on account of this very humility, there is grievous pride within. And unless the mind were sometimes puffed up by the virtue of abstinence, the arrogant Pharisee would by no means have studiously numbered fasting among his great merits, saying, "I fast twice in the week." Thus the gluttonous are to be admonished, that in giving themselves to the enjoyment of dainties, they do not pierce themselves through with the sword of lechery, and that they perceive how great loquacity, how great levity of mind, lie in wait for them through eating, lest while they softly serve the belly, they become cruelly bound in the nooses of vice. For by so much the further do we go back from our second parent, as by immoderate indulgence, when the hand is stretched out for food, we renew the fall of our first parent. But, on the other hand, the abstinent are to be admonished ever anxiously to look out, lest while they fly the vice of gluttony, still worse vices be engendered, as it were, of virtue, lest while they macerate the flesh, their spirit break out into impatience. And so there be no virtue in the vanquishing of flesh, the spirit being overcome by anger. Sometimes, moreover, while the mind of the abstinent keeps anger down, it is corrupted, as it were, by a foreign joy coming in, and loses all the good of abstinence, in that it fails to guard itself from spiritual vices. Hence it is rightly said through the prophet, "In the days of your fasts are found your wills." And shortly after, "You fast for debates and strifes, and you smite with the fists." For the will pertains to delight, the fist to anger. In vain, then, is the body worn by abstinence, if the mind, abandoned to disorderly emotions, is dissipated by vices. And again, they are to be admonished that, while they keep up their abstinence without abatement, they do not suppose this to be of eminent virtue before the hidden judge, lest, if it perchance be supposed to be of great merit, the heart be lifted up to haughtiness. For hence it is said through the prophet, "Is it such a fast that I have chosen? But break your bread to the hungry, and bring the needy and the wanderers into your house." In this matter, it is to be considered how small the virtue of abstinence is accounted, seeing that it is not commended but for other virtues. Hence Joel says, "Sanctify a fast." For indeed, to sanctify a fast is to show abstinence of the flesh to be worthy of God by other good things being added to it. The abstinent are to be admonished that they then offer to God an abstinence that pleases him, when they bestow on the indigent the nourishment they withhold from themselves. For we should wisely attend what is blamed by the Lord through the prophet, saying, "When you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh month for these 70 years, did you at all fast a fast unto me? And when you did eat and drink, did you not eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves?" For a man fasts not to God, but to himself, if what he withholds from his belly for a time he does not give to the needy, but keeps to be offered afterwards to his belly. Wherefore, lest either gluttonous appetite throw the one sort off their guard, or the afflicted flesh trip up the other by elation, let the former hear this from the mouth of the truth. And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged in surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this world. And in the same place there is added a profitable fear. And so that day come upon you unawares. For like a snare shall it come on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Let the latter hear, not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. Let the former hear, meat for the belly and the belly for meats, but God shall destroy both it and them. And again, not in rioting and drunkenness. And again, food does not commend us to God. Let the latter hear, to the pure all things are pure, but unto those who are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. Let the former hear, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is their own confusion. Let the latter hear, some shall depart from the faith, and a little after, forbidding to marry, and commanding to abstain from meats which God has created to be received with thanksgiving of them who believe and know the truth. Let those hear, it is good neither to eat flesh, nor to drink wine, nor anything whereby your brother stumbles. Let the others hear, use a little wine for your stomach's sake, and your frequent infirmities. Thus, both the former may learn not to desire inordinately the food of the flesh, and the latter not dare to condemn the creature of God which they do not lust after. Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, Chapter 20. How those who give away what is their own and those who seize what belongs to others are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are those who already give compassionately from their own and those who still would fain seize even what belongs to others. For those who already give compassionately of their own are to be admonished not to lift themselves up in swelling thought above those to whom they impart earthly things, not to esteem themselves better than others because they see others to be supported by them. For the lord of an earthly household, in distributing the ranks and ministries of his servants, appoints some to rule, but some to be ruled by others. Those he orders to supply to the rest what is necessary, these to take what they receive from others. And yet it is, for the most part, those that rule who offend, while those that are ruled remain in favor with the good man of the house. Those who are dispensers incur wrath. Those who subsist by the dispensation of others continue without offense. Those, then, who already give compassionately of the things which they possess, are to be admonished to acknowledge themselves to be placed by the heavenly Lord as dispensers of temporal supplies, and to impart the same all the more humbly from their understanding that the things which they dispense are not their own. And when they consider that they are appointed for the service of those to whom they impart what they have received, by no means let vainglory elate their minds, but let fear depress them. Whence also it is needful for them to take anxious thought, lest they distribute what has been committed to them unworthily, lest they bestow something on those on whom they ought to have spent nothing, or nothing on those to whom they ought to have spent something, or much on those on whom they ought to have given little, or little on those on whom they ought to have spent much, lest by precipitancy they scatter unprofitably what they give, lest by tardiness they mischievously torment petitioners, lest the thought of receiving a favor in return creep in, lest craving for transitory praise extinguish the light of giving, lest accompanying moroseness beset an offered gift, lest in case of a gift that has been well offered, the mind be exhilarated more than is fit, lest when they have fulfilled all aright, they give something to themselves, and so at once lose all after they have accomplished all. For that they may not attribute to themselves the virtue of their generosity, let them hear what is written. If any man administer, let him do it as of the ability which God administers. That they may not rejoice immoderately in benefits bestowed, let them hear what is written. When you shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, We are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. That moroseness may not spoil generosity, let them hear what is written. God loves a cheerful giver. That they may not seek transitory praise for a gift bestowed, let them hear what is written. Do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. That is, do not let the glory of the present life mix itself with the largesses of piety, nor let desire of favor know anything of the work of rectitude. That they may not require a return for benefits bestowed, let them hear what is written. When you make a dinner or a supper, do not call your friends, or your brethren, or your kinsmen, or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you again, and a recompense be made to you. But when you make a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, for they do not have anything to recompense you with. That they may not supply too late what should be supplied at once, let them hear what is written. Do not say to your friend, Go and come again, and tomorrow I will give, when you might give immediately. Lest, under pretense of generosity, they should scatter what they possess unprofitably, let them hear what is written. Let your alms sweat in your hand. Lest when much is necessary, little be given, let them hear what is written. He that sows sparingly shall reap also sparingly. Lest when they ought to give little, they give too much, and afterwards, enduring want badly themselves, break out into impatience, let them hear what is written. Not that other men be eased and you burdened, but by an equality, that your abundance may supply their want, and that their abundance may be a supply to your want. For when the soul of the giver does not know how to endure want, then, in withdrawing much from himself, he seeks out against himself occasion of impatience. For the mind should first be prepared for patience, and then either much or all be bestowed in bounty, lest the inroad of want being borne with but little equanimity, both the reward of previous bounty be lost, and subsequent murmuring bring ruin upon the soul. Lest they give nothing at all to those on whom they ought to bestow something, let them hear what is written. Give to every man who asks of you. Lest they should give something, however little, to those on whom they ought to bestow nothing at all, let them hear what is written. Give to the good man, and receive not a sinner. Do well to him that is lowly, and do not give to the ungodly. And again, set out your bread and wine on the burial of the just, but do not eat and drink of it with sinners. For he gives his bread and wine to sinners, who gives assistance to the wicked, because they are wicked. For which cause, also, some of the rich of this world nourish players with profuse bounties, while the poor of Christ are tormented with hunger. He, however, who gives his bread to one that is indigent, though he be a sinner, not because he is a sinner, but because he is a man, does not, in truth, nourish a sinner, but a poor righteous man, because what he loves in him is not his sin, but his nature. Those who already distribute compassionately what they possess are to be admonished also that they study to keep careful guard, lest when they redeem by alms the sins they have committed, they commit others which will still require redemption, lest they suppose the righteousness of God to be for sale, thinking that if they take care to give money for their sins, they can sin with impunity. For the soul is more than food, and the body than raiment. He, therefore, who bestows food or raiment upon the poor, and yet is polluted by iniquity of soul or body, has offered the lesser thing to righteousness, and the greater thing to sin. For he has given his possessions to God, and himself to the devil. But on the other hand, those who still would fain seize what belongs to others are to be admonished to give anxious heed to what the Lord says when he comes to judgment. For he says, I was hungry, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me. And these he previously addresses, saying, Depart from me, you cursed, into eternal fire, which is prepared for the devil and his angels. Lo, they are in no way told that they have committed robberies or any other acts of violence, and yet they are given over to the eternal fires of Gehenna. Hence, then, it is to be gathered with how great damnation those will be visited who take what is not their own, if those who have indiscreetly kept their own are smitten with so great a punishment. Let them consider in what guilt the seizing of goods must bind them, if not parting with them subjects to such a penalty. Let them consider what injustice inflicted must deserve, if kindness unbestowed is worthy of so great a chastisement. When they are intent on seizing what is not their own, let them hear what is written. Woe to him that increases that which is not his! How long does he heap up against himself thick clay? For indeed, for a covetous man to heap up against himself thick clay is to pile up earthly gains into a load of sin. When they desire to enlarge greatly the spaces of their habitation, let them hear what is written. Woe unto you that join house to house and lay field to field, even until there be no place left. What, will you dwell alone in the midst of the earth? As if to say plainly, how far do you stretch yourselves, you who cannot bear to have comrades in a common world? Those who are joined to you, you keep down, and ever find some against whom you may have power to stretch yourselves. When they are intent on increasing their money, let them hear what is written. The covetous man is not full of money, and he that loves riches will not reap the fruit thereof. For indeed, he would reap fruit of them, were he minded, not loving them, to disperse them well. But whoever in his affection for them retains them, shall surely leave them behind him here without fruit. When they burn to be full at once with all manner of wealth, let them hear what is written. He who makes haste to be rich shall not be innocent. For certainly, he who goes about to increase his wealth is negligent in avoiding sin. And being caught after the manner of birds, while looking greedily at the bait of earthly things, He is not aware in what a noose of sin he is being strangled. When they desire any gains of the present world, and are ignorant of the losses they will suffer in the world to come, let them hear what is written. An inheritance to which haste is made in the beginning, in the final end, shall lack blessing. For indeed, we derive our beginning from this life, that we may come in the end to the lot of blessing. They, therefore, who make haste to an inheritance in the beginning, cut off from themselves the lot of blessing in the end. Since while they crave to be increased in goods here, through the iniquity of avarice, they become disinherited there, of their eternal patrimony. When they either solicit very much, or succeed in obtaining all that they have solicited, let them hear what is written. What does a man profit if he should gain the whole world but lose his own soul? As if the truth said plainly, how does a man profit, though he gather together all that is outside himself, if this very thing only, which is himself, he damns? But for the most part, the covetousness of spoilers is the sooner corrected if it be shown by the words of such as admonish them, how fleeting is the present life. If mention be made of those who have long endeavored to grow rich in the world, and yet have been unable to remain long among their acquired riches, from whom hasty death has taken away suddenly and all at once whatever, neither all at once nor suddenly they have gathered together, who have not only left here what they had seized, but have carried with them to the judgment an arraignment for seizure. Let them, therefore, be told of examples of such as these, whom they would, doubtless, even themselves in words condemn, so that when after their words they come back to their own heart, they may blush to imitate those whom they judge. End of chapter 20.